Hi, I'm really glad to be here today. My name is Kathy Ingalls, and I'm a nurse practitioner at my core. So I'm coming from a little bit different perspective, and I'm really happy to have the chair of my doctoral project here today, Deb Messikar, who is also a veteran, a woman veteran, and she was very supportive during the whole process. So, this was a small qualitative study that I did about rural women veterans in Central Oregon. There's very little information about what rural women veterans do in terms of mental health, and there are many issues that they face. And having been a provider at the at a community-based outpatient clinic through the Veterans Administration in Bend, Oregon, I had many questions about what women veterans were doing. I have no disclosures. So we know that the number of women veterans are increasing greatly. In fact, the number of veterans overall in this nation are decreasing, but the numbers of women are increasing. So they really are a focus for services through both the Veterans Administration and then through our communities. And as a primary care provider in this small clinic, we served about 6,000 veterans. I had a panel of about 1,200 patients that I saw, many of whom were women. And I had many questions about how we were looking at primary care but not integrating mental health, especially in these people that were so traumatized by war situations or, as it turns out, sexual assault situations. So I went back to school to become a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner and then moved into mental health at this community-based outpatient clinic. And I found out that there were over 1,500 women veterans in this three-county area of Central Oregon. I had no idea when I was working as a primary care provider, and out of about 19,000 veterans in the area. In primary care, about 350 of the women were actually utilizing primary care services, but in mental health, I probably saw maybe 50 women. And I was the first female provider in mental health, and there didn't seem to be a whole lot of concern about providing services for women veterans. So this kind of sparked my thought about, you know, what they were doing for mental health services. So really the purpose of this study was to try to figure out the barriers to mental health care for rural women veterans. Because so few of them were utilizing the VA, I assumed that there were problems with their utilization. And I also wanted to provide some descriptive data on a group of these women veterans, their use and their perception of mental health services in Oregon. There essentially is no research on rural women veterans. There is quite a bit of research now focusing mainly on experiences of women veterans, but not really on treatments that are effective for their mental health care. And there is beginning to be more research on male rural veterans, but again, the women have really been left out of all of the studies. So for my methods, I was hopeful to be able to use the VA to interview these women, and as it turned out, getting through IRB with the VA was impossible. What a surprise. So interestingly, I had been working as a nurse practitioner at a volunteer clinic in town. It's called the Volunteers in Medicine, and they have clinics all over the country. But it was a clinic that was originally set up to take care of the uninsured and the working poor, essentially. So I had been working there, and thanks to Deb, she suggested that we try utilizing more of a community approach to recruit the women veterans, some of which were using the Volunteers in Medicine clinic. So we were able to post a flyer at the Volunteers in Medicine clinic, and they were really behind and supportive for this project. They were a group of women that one saw the flyer and then alerted many other friends, and that's how we gathered the participants in this study. And they were more than willing to come forward and talk about their experiences. Again, the human subjects was a critical issue because they were really concerned. The women veterans that I interviewed were really concerned about divulging any information that might affect their service-connected disability claims. Several of them were actually going through the process at that point, and they were afraid that if their name got out there, it would have negative consequences on their ability to collect a service-connected disability. So it was completely non-anonymous. They were given a consent form that we didn't have them sign, and then I did the taped interviews and destroyed the tapes after I analyzed the information. So also they have quotations. I'm going to quote a couple of things because I think it's really interesting about their experiences and sort of perceptions about care. But that can't be attributed to any of the female veterans. So the interview questions essentially looked at their use of services, and I didn't limit it to their use of services as veterans, and as I found out, they actually talked about their experiences while they were active duty. So that was one of the surprises in this study, is that not only did they use services after they were veterans, but they initially used services, all 10 of them, when they were active duty in the military, with you know, both positive and negative consequences to doing that. And I also looked at their perception of the services, both in the active duty and the military. They were all Army veterans. And then their perception of services through their experiences with the Veterans Administration. And some of them had actually used Veterans Administration services in other parts of the country, but all of the women had settled in the Central Oregon area, and so they had used services at this community-based outpatient clinic as well. And then I wanted to find out about their awareness of local services. There aren't many services, to be quite honest, a Veterans Administration service clinic, and then the local Veterans Service Officer, who is the person, is an employee of the county, who helps veterans put in their claims for disability. And this was a male, so interesting. Many of the women weren't comfortable going to this man to get their claims for military sexual trauma, or to start the process for post-traumatic stress disorder. So they tended to go out of the area to find help with doing their claims, which is a real inconvenience. And then I looked at some demographic data as well. I did not ask about service-connected disability, and every single one of the women brought up their service-connected disabilities. So that was an important thing. We didn't really want to broach that subject with IRB, but they brought it up, so it's interesting data that I collected on that. And this is just one of the local services. It's an equine PTSD therapy group. Of course, it's Central Oregon, so it's the wild, wild west, and horses are big time there. So, but really, this was a very limited service. It's a great, great program that had some funding, but only three or four of the women were able to utilize it. So what I found, which is really pretty similar to what's in the literature about how women veterans use services, is there's a precipitating event. And as it turns out, in their active duty military service, there tends to be this kind of chronic sexual harassment. It can be sexual assault. Two of the women had actually been in combat situations, so they had sort of traumatic combat stressors. But this kind of chronic gender discrimination about how sort of worthless they were and they shouldn't be in the military, and And that continues, even with some of the younger veterans that I interviewed that were in the Operation Iraqi Freedom, which is this latest war. They continue to talk about how this was still a problem in their day-to-day living. Then the next thing that I found was that there was a supportive peer that noticed that these women, after they had some kind of precipitating event, that they noticed that the women were acting kind of crazy, is the way they talked about it. And under the urging of one of their supportive peers, it tended to be someone in their unit in the military. So this is all during their active duty. It's not even when they're veterans. Encouraged them to go get help, even though they risked a lot by having to go get help. Oftentimes they got to the point where they really weren't functioning very well, and so they did go seek mental health care. And then the last thing I found were there were cultural barriers to care. And when I talk about culture, I mean in the context of the whole military system and being a woman in the military and being a woman in a combat unit or in an army unit, and all sorts of gender discrimination, kind of this chronic, you're no good, you don't have any use except for whatever, being at home in the kitchen, and it just was this day-to-day chronic stressor for most of them. And then also a lack of caring. When they did go to seek help, there tended to be this perception that, they were just crazy and they needed to, suck it up and be a good soldier. And most of them were really good soldiers and they really wanted to make a career out of the Army. But it was so difficult because they really didn't get any support, especially if they went forward to try and ask for care. And then the stigma. If you go to seek services, you are automatically labeled, and many of these women that I talked to ended up leaving the military because once you go and report or once you go and talk to someone, then it seemed like they felt as though there was every attempt made to just get rid of them, to get them out of the service. And then with the demographic data, again, they were all Army veterans. This was a group of women, the average age was 51, which is a little older than the national average of women veterans. But they ranged in age from 25 up to 57. Nine out of the 10 of them were enlisted, and there was one officer who was a physician, actually, who was in combat in Iraq. There were 6 deployments, 3 of them to Iraq. And again, the sort of the service-connected disability issue was really interesting. So out of the 10 women, 8 of them had reported military sexual trauma, which is a higher number than we see nationally, although we're still sort of gathering data on the military sexual trauma with women veterans. It's between 1 and 3, 1 and 5, something like that. Mental health diagnoses related to military sexual trauma, 6 out of the 10. Mental health diagnoses related to combat, 2 out of the 10. And then mental health diagnoses related to combat and military sexual trauma. And another interesting thing I found working in mental health is that the women that were service-connected for a mental health diagnosis related to combat or military sexual trauma, there was an access to diagnosis like borderline personality or personality disorder, and they didn't get the PTSD related diagnosis as frequently as the men did. So there was one woman who was in combat in Iraq, and she was labeled as bipolar, and she clearly had PTSD. It's so aggravating. And then I think another couple of the women, one had a major depressive disorder, which certainly goes along with PTSD, and then another one had anxiety disorder. But, it was really PTSD. So really, What I found is that they attempted to use, the 10 of them attempted to use mental health services when they were in their active duty, in the active duty Army. Some benefited, some didn't. Their perception of care was really dependent on where they were. Some had counselors that were very attentive to their needs, and others just felt like it was a waste of time and they were labeled and so didn't return. And then their use of the VA, it's interesting because the clinic I worked in, and I don't think this is really atypical for kind of a rural community-based clinic, it was very oriented towards Vietnam, male Vietnam veterans. And so there were lots of posters on the walls of these male sort of combat veterans. And there was a unisex bathroom in the waiting room, which just, I couldn't believe it, that women had to use. You know, so everyone's sitting in the waiting room for their appointment, and you know, men and women, and the women had to use this unisex bathroom. It was horrendous, actually. And there are attempts now to change that. So again, the service-connected disabilities. This is a higher rate of service-connected disability than what is seen nationally. So implications. For the women veterans who are living rurally, there are few resources typically, and in this case, they did have more sort of gender-friendly services available in Portland. So I live in Bend, and it's 165 miles over a mountain pass to get to the Portland VA. I mean, it's just, there's a van that goes there every day, but it ends up being a 12-hour trip, and if the weather is bad, we get snow pretty frequently. It's really a barrier to women being able to get care. And I think this is fairly typical for rural women veterans. They have to go elsewhere in order to get services that are more tailored to their needs. For healthcare providers, this sort of looking at it from both the healthcare providers and from a community standpoint, women aren't going to Veterans Administration clinics, and so as communities, I feel like we're responsible for providing care and providing accessible care and culturally appropriate care for these women to be able to get the mental health care they need. So thank you to the women veterans. This is another picture of one of the women veterans. To the Jonas Center for Nursing and Veterans Health Care. This group of women are so incredibly resilient, and they've been through so much, and I owe them a lot. So, thank you.